Hi, everybody. Today I'm going to talk about how we've done over the past couple months integrating a Knight's Landing machine from Intel into our fledgling HPC facility at Brookhaven. More from an admin's perspective and an inexperienced one at that when it comes to HPC things, so this will be kind of an exposition of things that we've encountered and problems we've had to solve, some of which may be more common than others, but yeah, here it is. So, a quick timeline is that last fall, we took delivery of this machine. In the winter, there was sort of several iterations that I wasn't involved in, but my colleague Alex Zaitsev was, of doing hardware upgrades and debugging issues. And then since the late winter and spring, I've been getting the thing sort of configured with an image that we control and trying to get it running. So it's a 142 node cluster. It has this is the model of the KNL core, so it has the nice power of two number of cores and 256 logical cores, so there's four threads on each core. It has OmniPath, which I'll get into, but the interconnect is a sort of a standard fat tree topology, and these are your statistics. Just a little bit about Knight's Landing. Why does it exist? What makes it different? It is, as I said, four threads per core, which is unusual. You know, usually hyperthreading is just two, and it does that because it takes advantage of very super wide SMID instructions, including things like prefetching. And so if you write your code to take advantage of these things, you can get really good pipelining and really good efficiency from these cores. But of course, that takes significant code changes. And I'll get into some benchmarking we've done later regarding auto vectorization and other things. The nodes are on a 2D mesh. There is a multi-level DRAM cache off of the die, which acts can be configured in different modes. And I'll talk about that as well. And we, you know, the standard software suite, Intel compilers and PMI2 and other things. So just a little bit about the hardware. The memory modes, it can operate in, as I mentioned, the MCD RAM can be configured to be visible to the CPU, to the OS, so it sees basically the RAM that's on the die and then this as a separate thing into NUMA nodes. You can put it in cache mode, which is what we're operating in for the most part, where it acts as like a really large L2 cache, is my understanding of, so it becomes invisible. And then you can configure it in a hybrid mode where you would take out complementary amounts of it and configure it as cache and also make it visible. You can change the way that memory is mapped onto the die by default. So alt-all mode is that it just uniformly takes across this whole grid of processors and each address, you know, that will be allocated somewhere on it. And so you get your most smoothed out but consistently non-optimal performance. Quadrant mode, which is where I kind of imagine just drawing a square and cutting into quarters, and it will try and hash the nodes into memory addresses into the nodes near where the cores are, so you get better locality. And then I don't really have much experience with changing these modes, but there is another mode that it is advertised as having where it will sort of go into the quadrants and expose them as NUMA nodes with plenty of chance for really fine-tuning things. So what about the OmniPath? And I apologize, some of these slides were contributed by my colleague and office mate, Alex Zaitsev, and you can probably, any of you who know him, might identify his verbose style. A word about the OmniPath interconnect is that it is a kind of an aggressive competitor with against Mellanox's InfiniBand at this point. It's Intel's sort of bid into that space, apparently. It boasts better performance, better price performance, and slightly better bandwidth and slightly better latency. So about a year ago, this might even be a year and a half ago, we ran some benchmarks on a cluster provided by Intel, not Knight's Landing, but just a Xeon-based OmniPath cluster. And you can see that we can get close to the 80 to 100 gigabits that it should be based on running actual tests. And the latency is around, this is about one, you know, microsecond, so you can see sub-microsecond latencies. So the first thing that we hit when we tried to actually run code on the machine was that on the night, right, so the kernel driver for OmniPath is called HFI1, and it is single thread bound, so basically one poor little KNL core, which is one quarter of 64th of the machine, can be chugging along at 100% trying to drive the interface if you have one transfer going on. And so this made there be a limit of about maybe 80% or so of the bandwidth of a single interface on the Knights Landing cluster, and we had dual rail, so we were getting way less than we had bought. So the LQCD people, who were the motivation behind this machine, they came up with a clever solution to this by just splitting their code up and running more MPI ranks on the node so that they can take some parallelism from multiple transfers going on. Intel is aware of this. There are other communities that would very much like this fixed, and this is the timeline. Don't, you know, take that for what it's worth. And so there has been also the fix I mentioned has been incorporated into some of the LQCD people's code, which is then being, you know, shared around the collaboration in the US. So this is basically what they did, right? First, they tried to actually sort of monkey patch the MPI implementation to capture the MPI send and receives and make them talk to, you know, when they're talking to the ranks within the node. And that involved extra mem copies, which was quite slow. So they ended up pulling that part out and using a POSIX shared memory, like a DevSHM kind of backed communication for the intra node ranks. And the inter node ranks are, you know, using the four parallel omnipaths. Each rank is talking to its correspondingly indexed ones across the cluster. Right, so if you have more than, what's the actual number? Yeah, 128 client interfaces on the switch, you should not run the subnet manager there. This is as opposed to the InfiniBand one, where you can have a lot bigger fabric before you start needing custom hardware for your fabric managers. But so we have more than 128 client interfaces, right? We have 144 times two. So we have two fabric manager nodes running in the cluster. And so when we tried to change the subnet prefix to a non-default value, things became massively unstable and we were chasing, you know, strange issues. We had initially channel bonded some IP over IB, Omnipath, you know, backed interfaces, and we're seeing strange drops and you know, instability in the cluster and in the kernel and things. And it came around that once we put the subnet prefix back to normal, everything just stabilized. So that was fun. Right, we have on our institutional cluster, which is our more production-ready HPC cluster at Brookhaven, and it's been in use for the better part of 6 months now, has a GPFS storage system of about a petabyte attached to it. We would like to leverage some of that for this cluster as well, so we found ourselves building Omnipath to InfiniBand gateways, configuring three nodes with dual OPA and four times InfiniBand cards set up with routing and, you know, regular IP forwarding in between them and all kinds of tuning to try and get some performance out of it. We took the, as Brian would say, this is even worse than load balancing via DNS. We actually just randomized the route configuration across the cluster to load balance across our gateways. And we were able to get about this performance. You know, we can pull about 1 gig a second and total throughput of around 20, and which is fine because the storage isn't, you know, it's not going to support that much more than that, and this is a sort of second user of it, and we want it to be available for its first one, so we don't see this as a problem for the foreseeable future. This is a picture. Now, I've described all the components. This was also pulled from Alex's CHEP talks. Basically, right, this is the picture of the nodes. This is the factory topology here, our switches. We have our fabric managers and our gateways here connecting into the institutional cluster storage. Right, and the other thing is with the storage, right, on the IC side, it's all InfiniBand, so it's using RDMA, so you get pretty good performance from GPFS, whereas here it's going through the gateways, and that's also a large limiting factor. Some experience about maintaining the hardware, right? When they first came in, I mentioned that we ran from the vendor that we got it from a sort of check script that was a BIOS you boot into and found some bad SKU numbers for known bad CPUs that Intel came and replaced. Then we had BIOS upgrades to fix some things where we, at one point, the cluster had downclocked itself to be about 50 megahertz, and that was impressively slow. And so we debugged with them and settled on these version numbers, which are, you know, meaningless unless you guys are doing something similar. Right. The other thing that we saw was that when it was shipped from the vendor, it was a RHEL 7.2, I believe, base kernel, and from November of 2015, and including the drivers and software from Intel at the time that it was shipped to us, and performance was pretty much as expected. When we provisioned it with our image, which was also RHEL 7.2, but just it's actually Scientific Linux 7.2, which pulls in kernel updates from upstream. So this was the kernel that we pulled in, which is from about the summer or fall of last year. Massive performance reduction found on a single node basis by the QCD guys. So I took a RHEL spec file and I tweaked it enough to build a vanilla kernel, which was the latest at the time. Same thing. So there was obviously something that went upstream that got pulled into the RHEL stream that caused this. Just a few weeks ago, we went to this kernel, which was released, I believe, earlier this month. And the reports are that the performance is basically back. So we were sticking back here. We're going to hop over this. And now it looks like we can actually hop to this and get what we expect. Included in that is an upgrade of the HFI extra driver and the Xeon Phi processor software libraries. That's XPPSL from Intel. And that includes things like hardware locality library and a kernel module called Zone Sort, which actually goes through the RAM and sort of in like passes the way that same page merging or huge pages, transparent huge pages would work, goes through it and resorts the memory because there's a known problem where performance will degrade the longer the machine is up as memory gets more fragmented. So how do we build and provision these things? We wanted to make it just like the rest of our systems, so we use a minimal kickstart and we try and use Puppet for everything, which is an impressively slow feat that it can take 40 minutes to almost an hour to do a Puppet run the first time just because of how slow a single thread on this system is. Right, the Intel software packages, they come in a large tarball, and I would have loved to just take the RPMs out and put them on our image server and had them deployed as part of the image, but Intel actually says explicitly, don't do that in the documentation. So we basically extract this thing and run it one time in Puppet, which is ugly. It's a giant Perl script, but it gets the job done. Right, and also we have to reboot after we configure it the first time because we configure the IP over IB interfaces on it, which are talking to the OPA gateways that let us get to the storage. So I wish we had some more statistics here, but this shows the performance reduction of the kernel between this purple and this batch here. I know we had more, but the plot I got from Christoph Lenner from the LQCD guys only included this. This was consistent across the rest of the nodes, a slightly bigger variation and consistently lower performance. But the latest kernel puts us back in this family of, in this region again. Again, Christoph claims pretty decent weak scaling of his code, so he's able to run larger and larger jobs and have, not too bad a degradation here. Again, this is more. They report they're happy. This isn't my area of expertise, so I say, okay. Right, switching modes. So remember all the memory modes I mentioned and the cache modes. So there's a BIOS utility that you can run from user land in the OS that will switch these modes, and you can reboot them and into the new mode, which is great. Slurm even has code. Right, we're running Slurm as the batch system. It even has code to automatically switch these modes for you, reboot, and come right back up into the new job. So it'll watch the queue, and it'll try and shape how much of your farm is, how much of the cluster is in which mode to be prepared to receive the incoming jobs. Right, everything's great, except after several conversations, an Intel engineer said on the phone, oh yeah, if you don't power cycle, you get garbage. So some people have reportedly been IPMI power cycling their machines to sort of suicide the node into the next mode by hand. We didn't want to do that. But again, soon, for what it's worth, there is a BIOS update that will fix that, and I have that from them fairly explicitly. So what can we do with this machine that might be more relevant to this community? Well, we decided to run some Atlas code on it, and we also ran some HEPSpec. So my colleague Shin at BNL took some Atlas code, took the same job running over the same 4,000 events, and ran it across the cluster. So this is the node index, and this is how long it took. You can see pretty stable performance, and that 4K events in that much time, I don't quite know what that means, but maybe someone does. What might be more helpful is running HEPSpec 06 the way you're supposed to. You get these numbers. This is for one process per core. This is one process per thread. You can see the increase there. It's not insignificant, but it is, if you had any I/O profile with that and it scaled with the core count, you would be, hitting some limitations most likely. So what can you do? GCC as of 5.3 or maybe earlier, but this is the version that our admin tested on SL7, has some flags for basically auto-vectorizing and optimizing things for this architecture. And this is in 64-bit, and so right, we then said, okay, so what is the difference between this and this? On a standard Broadwell, it was about plus 10%. But going to 64-bit and allowing 64-bit AVX 512 auto-vectorization to happen gives us about a 50% increase in both. And so that is actually pretty good because this was with no other effort, right? And you would expect that you have to make significant changes to your code in order to change your algorithms around to be able to really take advantage of the kind of vectorization and start intelligently doing the prefetch instructions and so on and so on. We did none of that and still were able to get plus 50%. Again, still, this is not anywhere near a high-end Skylake system at this point, but yeah. So we have Slurm running on here, and we have it on the institutional cluster as well, as I mentioned, and we've been sort of piecing together some monitoring. Myself and my colleague, Kostin Karmarku, we put together some kind of grungy Slurm monitoring that screen scrapes some of the output and uses the PySlurm bindings, which are kind of abandoned at this point, to get some information and dump it into our Graphite cluster so we can get some nice monitoring in our Grafana. And I personally would welcome a discussion of anyone else in LQCD who is using some kind of monitoring with Grafana for an HPC cluster, something like the way people seem to be converging on Fifemon for Condor installations. So this is just what we've put together. It allows you to monitor clusters, and we have another one that allows you to monitor individual allocations and or projects in Slurm and individual users within that and how they're approaching their limits and so on and so forth. So how am I doing on time? I don't know, okay. Right. The LQCD guys are going to be buying a cluster this fall. There is still a discussion going on as to what they're going to buy. KNL, NVIDIA GPUs, and Skylake systems with neither are all on the table currently, I believe. We can say that the machine is, since about February, they've been using it to make some results, but the machine is now, since this past early in April when we got a 7.3 image that stabilized and got us decent performance results. And I should say also that the old kernel we were running that had the better performance, nodes would be crashing periodically. At one point, a job launched and 64 nodes disappeared overnight. So the stability has improved with this latest release as well, which is really the impetus for going there as opposed to the performance. But it's finally reliably producing results. It took more effort than we had anticipated to get there. And the surprising thing is that the HEPSPEC per dollar, right, is about 1.5 better for Broadwell, but if you remember that 50% increase for the auto-vectorization tells me that with little to no code changes, so a low kind of effort situation, you can probably get close to parity if you compile with those flags. And take everything with a grain of salt with these numbers because right, this is not, we know HEPSPEC 06 isn't the greatest metric to track real code performance and so on and so on. So that's it, thank you. Any questions?
You know, I'm surprised that HEPSPEC runs on this mic machine because when I tried with the previous version, I was not even able to run it.
So this
is a completely different machine.
Yeah, it's the on-die as opposed to the coprocessor.
HEPSPEC is not born for, it's designed to run on a HPC machine. Do you have a question for William? Yeah, there's a couple of questions. Luca?
I just was wondering if you notice any difference in HEPSPEC core trying different memory configuration and clustering configurations.
That is something we haven't had a chance to do, although I will say that for the LQCD guys, when a subset of the nodes was not in cache mode but was in all-to-all, I want to say, they noticed a massive performance reduction, which is as expected because their code is not optimized for that.
And also detail, make sure that when you're running with all the hyperthreads, the HEPSPEC is not swapping because the memory footprint is huge and you might be swapping.
Yes, actually the nodes were configured with very little swap and I didn't personally run them, but I believe that we were not.
Okay. Another question here.
So when you turned on auto vectorization, did you compare that auto vectorization or compare it against turning on auto vectorization for Broadwell too?
For
Broadwell? I mean, would Broadwell have gotten the same boost if you had made the same
flag changes?
You know, if it uses AVX 256 on Broadwell.
Yeah, I don't know. We were we weren't doing that because we were thinking more in terms of, I believe Skylake will have the 512 and we were going to try and do an apples to apples with that, but no, we didn't do that.
And could you maybe find some Atlas people to do real workload tests also on this with the various options? That would be
that
very
is a
interesting.
Great question. Actually, that would be for my boss, Tony, probably.
Tony, you want to comment?
So I think it was Brian, right, who asked this question about the improvements in the performance on the KNL with this change in the parameters. We tried the same thing on the x86 Intel. The effect is much smaller. I think it's a 10% boost instead of, I think, a 50% boost. And as far as having Atlas people, they are involved. So a lot of the US Atlas people are involved in running these tests. People from our tier twos who are helping us making the configuration. It was a bit of a challenge moving some of the stuff that exists in CVMFS now and getting them set up in our test cluster for this run.
Another question?
I think you only mentioned testing GCC. Have you tested the Intel compilers?
So the LQCD guys have, but for the HEPSpec, we have not.
Do you have any information about the other tests you see?
I believe that they saw a fairly significant speed up between a late model GCC and a Intel compiler. So.
Okay. So we have enough questions. Thank you again, William.
Thank you.